City Limits is a production of WAER, Syracuse Public Media, and is funded by generous grant support from the Central New York Community Foundation, Grossman St. Amour CPAs, National Grid, and listeners like you. To support the project, visit the City Limits About page at citylimitsproject.org.
41,000 Syracuse residents were below the poverty line in 2016.
At its core, poverty is about pushing down instead of having an opportunity to go up.
It's, generally speaking, lack of access to opportunity.
This is City Limits, a poverty project.
Welcome to City Limits. I'm Scott Willis. The Syracuse area's transportation infrastructure is clearly geared toward cars. I'm standing under the interchange of I-690 and I-81. Census statistics gathered for a transit study by the Syracuse Metropolitan Transportation Council show about two-thirds of city residents drive alone to work. Outside the city, that number is 88%. But what if we take cars out of the equation? Anywhere from 75% to 100% of city households in all but the outer fringes of the city have limited access to a vehicle. That includes households with more workers than cars, or no car at all. Those areas are pretty consistent with data showing the highest poverty levels, highest unemployment rates, and the lowest levels of education. So, how does the transportation system work for that vulnerable demographic? How can it be improved for those who take the bus, ride a bike, or even walk to get around? In this episode of City Limits, we'll hear from those deeply involved in the planning and design of our transportation systems and infrastructure, and how some make do without a car. Architect and planner Bob Haley has been part of the Moving People Transportation Coalition since its inception about 5 years ago. Group members are mainly concerned with the replacement for I-81 through the city. They favor a community grid. Haley actually credits the heated I-81 debate for spurring a larger conversation about transportation in and around the region. But he says a lot of people don't use I-81, so he sees transportation in the future as a mix of options.
We certainly know that a lot of our community does not have the kind of service we need for jobs, for access to libraries and public services. Over those years, our transit system, our bus systems have struggled just making routes work. And because of that, it's evolved a hub system. Well, hub systems go back and forth, and it's really to the advantage of the transportation system to manage people, but it may not serve key points. So part of this is to look at where is transportation needed, where are jobs, where are potential workers, and match potential job locations with potential work locations.
The Syracuse Metropolitan Transportation Council, or SMTC, published a 2017 report called WorkLink on that very dilemma, looking at transportation options for low-income workers. Megan Vitale is a principal transportation planner with a background as a design engineer.
Just about every study we do starts with an examination of what does the neighborhood look like around that area. And we have many studies. If you look back in them, they will include an examination of households without vehicles, commute to work, who's walking, who's biking.
Buses and passengers constantly come and go from Centro's downtown hub all day long. It's part of the classic hub and spoke system. Buses fan out along the city's main thoroughfares, Adams, Harrison, Salina, James, Genesee, Erie, South Avenue, generally concentrated on serving residents in and around those neighborhoods who rely on mass transit the most. Some of the buses are en route to the suburbs. There's East Syracuse and Manlius to the east, Liverpool and North Syracuse to the north, Nedro to the south, and Fairmount and Camillus to the west. Most agree the transit system does a pretty good job for its size in an area that has its share of sprawl, but it cannot and does not serve everyone's needs. Hours and routes don't always match work shifts and locations for those who might be trying to lift themselves out of poverty. So, how can it improve? Is there a way to still serve those who need it, and perhaps others who might consider the bus instead of their car? How about in conjunction with a bike, or maybe a ride-sharing service? Those are just some ideas that have been studied and could fill gaps in the area's transportation map.
My name is Rick Lee, and I'm the Chief Executive Officer of Centro.
Centro buses travel more than 100 routes and carry in excess of 18,000 riders per day. Lee says there are always requests to expand service, increase frequency of stops, and extend the hours they operate. But in fact, he says they've had to shrink the system in the four-county region by 20% over the last 10 years due to a decrease in funding.
That's one of the big barriers that we know poses a problem for people who are trying to use our system to get to and from work late in the evening and to some parts of the county where we just don't reach. With funding, you'd have the opportunity to expand your hours and provide a farther reach to those employment centers where, you know, you could help people establish themselves with good jobs and address the poverty issue.
Lee says they're always assessing routes to make sure they're serving the people and areas that would benefit the most. But it's a constant balancing act.
When we hear from agencies that there is a population that's underserved or that needs to be served, we pay attention to that. And we do a study to see if, you know, there's an area that needs to be served and if we can shift routes to areas where we know there's a transit-dependent population. We do that all the time. Sometimes the problems we face is that shifting a route means you're taking a bus away from a population that needs it to try to give it to a population that needs it.
But is there a better way if you were to reimagine how the transit system works? The SMTC's Smart One study does just that. Director James DeAugustino says the two routes look like a large X through the city, intersecting in and near downtown.
You're connecting Destiny USA, the college campuses of OCC and SU and ESF, the hospitals, the whole South Ave corridor. I mean, you're talking areas that have a lot of people living in them and a lot of entry-level jobs and a lot of destinations people want to get to, educational opportunities. That would make a huge difference. And you're talking about running a transportation system on a frequency that's significantly more than our traditional bus system. So you don't wait a half hour or 45 minutes for the bus. You're waiting 10 minutes, 15 minutes for the bus. And you know when it's going to come. And you miss one, you don't have to wait that long. The next one's coming right along on a regular schedule over extended hours. And we don't have that now. So to have that reliability of transit system when you're someone on the lower end of the economic spectrum or you're getting your foot on that first ladder to get your way up where you need to get at that job on time if you want to keep it, you need to have a reliable form of transportation. That really helps. Something like that could be game-changing in our community. I really believe that. We do a lot of talking in our community about the fact that we have a poverty problem, but our solutions aren't as ubiquitous as the complaining about it. And I think that there some of these solutions, they don't have to be that complicated.
But what about combining or linking modes of transportation? Peter Sarver is convener for the Moving People Transportation Coalition.
Is Uber or Lyft going to have partnerships with Centro, for instance, for the last mile? In other words, the bus line stops here, and how do you get from here to something a mile or two down the road? So there's a potential collaboration that could actually open up some new opportunities for people, whether it's work, recreation, or whatever. And Centro's already done that to a small extent in that they can accommodate bicycles in the front of their vehicles.
At the central bus hub, I spotted some who were riding their bikes and taking the bus.
Do you normally do the dual transportation thing?
Okay. Yep. Ride about a mile to the bus stop, and then get the bus here. Then I switch buses here, and then I get off the bus about a mile from my job.
Okay. And where's your job?
Up on Henry Clay.
Oh.
So it works out, though.
It works out? Okay. Well, good luck.
Thanks, buddy.
Christopher Duggar. I live in Syracuse. I get around, I guess. I mean, it gets me from point A to point B. You know, I got class, I got music, and I got home. That's it. Class, music, go home. Same routine every day.
So class, so where at?
Bryan and Shire. My major is basically networking technology.
And then music?
I do my own music. I record R&B and rap. My rap is basically like conscious rap, positive rap.
Duggar told me he's homeless. He says he's happy walking or riding a bike and that the bus works well when he needs it. He says a car is not a necessity or an option and feels safer without one. Bike lanes have been slowly popping up across parts of Syracuse for the past several years, like this one on East Genesee Street and South McBride. It's clearly defined in green, separated from the parking lanes and driving lanes. BSMTC's James DiAgostino says the city, county, and state are building out and connecting the growing network that includes the Creek Walk, Loop the Lake, and Empire State Trail coming soon along Erie Boulevard into DeWitt.
It's a very different system now than it was 15 plus years ago, and that's for the better. And I'd like to think that that trend is going to keep continuing, because when we go out and we talk to people, people don't really say add more lanes for more cars too often. They say we want better bike or ped facilities, or we want better transit systems.
Our toolbox of planning is completely different. It's evolved to be more inclusive in examinations of multi-modes, not just cars. So there's much that we can look at now for bicycle pedestrian treatments that did not exist 10, 15 years ago.
That's SMTC program manager Mario Colon. He says their long-range transportation plan objectives are heavy on bike and pedestrian improvement recommendations. It's just a matter of communities deciding which projects, if any, they want to pursue. The city of Syracuse recently took a leap toward encouraging bicycle use by approving its first bike-sharing program. Gotcha Bike is expected to have its system up and running by this fall. DPW transportation planner Neil Burke says it greatly expands accessible and affordable transportation options for those who don't have a car or don't want to drive or walk.
This is coming at an opportune time for the city as we continue to build out our bike network, but also as the state is making a relatively large investment with the Empire State Trail and connect the city to large commercial areas at points east and west, so DeWitt and Camillus, as well as to the rest of the state. And there are a lot of job opportunities. There's a lot of value there that will become more available to someone who may not be able to get there right now based on their needs, the bus schedule, and or their limited access to a motor vehicle.
It is a transportation tool. It's also an economic development tool. The ability to connect people to jobs, to urban employment centers. Downtown Syracuse, of course, is where you're going to see a high utilization rate, but we feel like connecting to neighborhoods where people don't have easy access to cars. We saw something similar with Uber and Lyft. And so as these sharing platforms and sharing industries are moving into a city like Syracuse, we think bike sharing is another great way that we can connect this.
That's Eric Ennis, economic development specialist with the city. He says once the bike share program is up and running, they'll have a better idea of who's using it.
We have a refugee and an immigrant population that a lot of these people are taking their driver's tests and they're getting their learner's permits, but at the same time, that takes time and that takes skill to get that. Cycling is a little easier, at least I believe it to be easier to learn how to do. And so we're offering a chance for people who may not even be from this country or native to Syracuse. They have the ability to get around in a much easier fashion.
The pricing standpoint can be adjusted based on the targeted user. So if there is a requirement for low-income individuals to have a reduced rate, that is something we can pursue and we will be pursuing with this rollout.
For some Syracuse area residents, walking might be their only option or suffice for where they need to go. I'm standing near one of the newer crosswalks installed by the state on West Street near Otisco Street. Peter Sarver with the Moving People Transportation Coalition says they did a walk audit of the near west and north sides that took into account a number of factors.
Taking a look at what the physical structure looks like, not just the sidewalks, but the way in which sidewalks interact with the streets, mm-hmm. and how housing and other structures contribute toward a sense of safety.
But just outside of the city, the infrastructure might not be that consistent. SMTC senior transportation planner Aaron McKeon says they did a sustainable streets project looking at pedestrian amenities in the city and its adjoining suburbs.
One of the things we were trying to do was match up where there are currently not sidewalks and where there might be a demand for pedestrian mobility. In other words, around grocery stores and schools and pharmacies and destinations like that people need to walk to on a regular basis. And one of the things that really jumps out is, sidewalk infrastructure is a very robust network within the city, And then as you get out of the city to areas built in the 50s and 60s, it sort of starts to fall apart. So wherever there's that interface between the city and the suburbs, say like in any of those suburban developments on the edge of the city where there's a grocery store and a big parking lot and everything's designed for cars, generally the pedestrian infrastructure, you know, the sidewalks and crosswalks, that starts to unravel on the edge of the city.
That can make it very dangerous for those navigating the busy corridors that cross from Syracuse into Geddes, for example. The SMTC's James DiAgostino says the region is pretty built out, so adding sidewalks outside of a major road rebuild would be too expensive and disruptive. It's become clear the area's existing transportation infrastructure and options aren't the ideal mix for Syracuse residents in poverty looking to get to job sites that are more scattered than they were decades ago. But DiAgostino feels there are effective and affordable solutions. They just need a champion to, as he says, own the problem.
That can't be us. We're the planners. We come up with the ideas and the kind of a recipe book as to what you can do. You could really make a significant difference in transportation for low-income people, connecting them with jobs less than you can build a bridge for. We see bridge work happening all the time. We don't question the utility of putting a couple million dollars into that, but several hundred thousand dollars into something that we haven't done in our community before, such as a vanpool service or a ride service to connect low-income people to jobs. People get really hesitant about making that kind of an investment. I don't really think we should. I mean, transportation is transportation. We all need it, and we need to make sure that the investments fit the need of our community in the day and time that we're living in. And that is an example of something that we need right now.
For City Limits, I'm Scott Willis.
Thanks for listening to City Limits, a production of WAER Syracuse Public Media. Find more from this series at citylimitsproject.org and subscribe in Apple Podcasts for automatic delivery of new episodes.